Galiana was disappointed. It took her 3 minutes to convince the machine to start, rather than the few dozen seconds she said it should have taken. She was, she told Clavain, in serious danger of getting rusty at this sort of thing. Clavain just thanked the gods that there had been no mechanical sabotage to the rover. No amount of neural intervention could have fixed that. That's another thing that makes it look like this is just an innocent trip outside, Galiana said. If he'd really wanted to abduct her, it wouldn't have taken much additional effort to stop us from following him. If he'd closed the door as well, we might not even have noticed he was gone. Haven't you ever heard of reverse psychology? Clavain said. I still can't see Iverson as a murderer, Neville. She checked his expression, her own face calm, despite her driving the machine. Her hands were folded in her lap. She was less isolated now, having used the rover's comm systems to establish a link back to the other conjoiners. Set her home, maybe. The obsessive loner and all that. Just a shame he's the dead one. Yes, Clavain said, uneasily. The rover itself ran on 6 wheels, a squat, pressurized hull perched low between absurd-looking balloon tires. Galiana gunned them hard down the ramp and across the ice, trusting the machine to glide harmlessly over the smaller crevasses. It seemed reckless, but if they followed the trail that Iverson had left, they were almost guaranteed not to hit any fatal obstacles. "Did you get anywhere with the source of the sickness?" Clavain asked. "No breakthroughs yet. Then here's a suggestion. Can you read my visual memory accurately?" Clavain did not need an answer. "While you were finding Iverson's body, I was looking over the lab samples. There were a lot of terrestrial organisms there. Could one of those have been responsible?" "You'd better replay the memory." Clavain did, picturing himself looking over the rows of culture dishes, test tubes, and gel slides, concentrating especially on those that had come from Earth rather than the locally obtained samples. In his mind's eye, the sample names refused to snap into clarity, but the machines that Galiana had seeded through his mind would already be locating the eidetically stored short-term memories and retrieving them with a clarity beyond the capabilities of Clavain's own brain. "Now, see if there's anything there that might do the job." "A terrestrial organism?" Galiana sounded surprised. "Well, there might be something there, but I can't see how it could have spread beyond the laboratory unless someone wanted it to." "I think that's exactly what happened."
"Sabotage?"
"Yes." "Well, we'll know sooner or later. I've passed the information to the others. They'll get back to me if they find a candidate. But I still don't see why anyone would sabotage the entire base, even if it was possible. Overthrowing the von Neumann machines is one thing. Mass suicide is another."
"I don't think it was mass suicide. Mass murder, maybe."
"And Iverson's your main suspect?"
"He survived, didn't he?"
"And Setterholm scrawled a message in the ice just before he died. It must have been a warning about him." But even as he spoke, he knew there was a second possibility, one that he could not quite focus on. Galiana swerved the rover to avoid a particularly deep and yawning chasm, shaded with vivid veins of turquoise blue. "There's a small matter of a missing motive." Clavain looked ahead, wondering if the thing he saw glinting in the distance was a trick of the eye.
"I'm working on that," he said.
Galiana halted them next to the other rover. The two machines were parked at the lip of a slope-sided depression in the ice. It was not really steep enough to call a crevasse, although it was at least 30 or 40 meters deep. From the rover's cab, it was not possible to see all the way into the powdery blue depths, although Clavain could certainly see the fresh footprints which descended into them. Up on the surface, marks like that would have been scoured away by the wind in days or hours, so these prints were very fresh. There were, he observed, two sets. Someone heavy and confident, and someone lighter, less sure of her footing. Before they had taken the rover, they had made sure that there were two suits aboard it. They struggled into them, fiddling with the latches. "If I'm right," Clavain said, "this kind of precaution isn't really necessary. Not for avoiding the sickness, anyway. But better safe than sorry.
Excellent timing, Galliana said, snapping down her helmet and giving it a quarter twist to lock into place. They've just pulled something from your memory, Neville. There's a family of single-celled organisms called dinoflagellates, one of which was present in the lab where we found Iverson. Something called Pheasteria piscicida. Normally, it's an ambush predator that attacks fish. Could it have been responsible for the madness? It's at least a strong contender. It has a taste for mammalian tissue as well. If it gets into the human nervous system, it produces memory loss and disorientation, as well as a host of physical effects. It could have been dispersed as a toxic aerosol released into the base's air system. Someone with access to the lab's facilities could have turned it from something merely nasty to something deadly, I think. We should have pinpointed it, Galliana. Didn't we swab the air ducts? Yes, but we weren't looking for something terrestrial. In fact, we were excluding terrestrial organisms, only filtering for the basic biochemical building blocks of diadem life. We just weren't thinking in criminal terms. More fool us, Clavaine said. Suited now, they stepped outside. Clavaine began to regret his haste in leaving the base so quickly, and having to make do with these old suits, and lacking any means of defense. Wanting something in his hand for moral support, he examined the equipment stowed around the outside of the rover until he found an ice pick. It would not be much of a weapon, but he felt better for it. You won't need that, Galliana said. What if Iverson turns nasty? You still won't need it. But he kept it anyway. An ice pick was an ice pick, after all. And the two of them walked to the point where the icy ground began to curve over. Clavaine examined the wrist of his suit, studying the cryptic and old-fashioned matrix of keypads that controlled the suit's functions. On a whim, he pressed something promising and was gratified when he felt crampon spikes from the soles of his boots anchoring him to the ice. Iverson! He shouted. Felka! But sound carried poorly beyond his helmet, and the ceaseless whipping wind would have snatched his words away from the crevasse. There was nothing to do but make the difficult trek into the blue depths. He led the way, his heart pounding in his chest, the old suit awkward and top-heavy. He almost lost his footing once or twice, and had to stop to catch his breath once he reached the level bottom of the depression, sweat running into his eyes. He looked around. The footprints led horizontally for 10 or 15 meters, weaving between fragile, curtain-like formations of opal ice. On some clinical level, he acknowledged that the place had a sinister charm. He imagined the wind breathing through those curtains of ice, making ethereal music, but the need to find Felka eclipsed such considerations. He focused only on the low, dark blue hole of a tunnel in the ice ahead of them. The footprints vanished into the tunnel. If the bastard's taken her, Clavaine said, tightening his grip on the pick. He switched on his helmet light and stooped into the tunnel, Galliana behind him. It was hard going. The tunnel wriggled, rose, and descended for many tens of meters, and Clavaine was unable to decide whether it was some weird natural feature, carved perhaps by a hot subglacial river, or whether it had been dug by hand much more recently. The walls were veined by worm tracks, a marbling like an immense magnification of the human retina. Here and there, Clavaine saw the dark smudges of worms moving through the cracks that were very close to the surface, though he knew it was necessary to stare at them for long seconds before any movement was discernible. He groaned, the stooping becoming painful, and then the tunnel widened out dramatically. He realized that he had emerged in a much larger space. It was still underground, although the ceiling glowed with the blue translucence of filtered daylight. The covering of ice could not have been more than a meter or two thick. A thin shell stretched like a dome over tens of meters of yawing nothing. Nearly sheer walls of delicately patterned ice rose up from a level, footprint-dappled floor. Ah, said Iverson, who was standing near one wall of the chamber. You decided to join us. Clavaine felt a stab of relief, seeing that Felka was standing not far from him, next to a piece of equipment Clavaine failed to recognize. Felka seemed unharmed. She turned toward him, the peculiar play of light and shade on her helmeted face making her seem older than she was.
Neville, he heard Felka say.